The top stories from the KCBS Radio Newsroom. This is the All Local.
Today, we're under constant pressure to be productive, but doing so is a lot more complicated than it sounds. To tell us more, we're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Dr. Masha Remsgar, behavioral scientist at Arizona State University. Dr. Remsgar, thank you so much for joining us today. And we now live in an age of artificial intelligence. Seems like that's putting even more pressure on us to be productive. And how realistic is that?
Good morning, Jason. It's a pleasure to be on. Yes, indeed. The AI kind of revolution is certainly has made, you know, quite the wave in all sorts of workforces. But it really has, we've seen an intensification of expectations being placed on specifically knowledge workers, and oftentimes in a way that isn't necessarily considered in a way that would enable sustainable performance.
Is this an impossible idea, being productive all the time?
The science certainly suggests so, you know. So we know that resilience to stress is really far from kind of a trait, and, you know, the productivity that comes from being able to handle high demands in a workplace and in life really kind of fluctuates. And it's this balance between one's resilience, so the kind of the capacity we have to handle stress and the demands that are being placed upon us. So because it's this fluctuating dynamic, it really does change from, you know, sometimes day to day, but certainly from month to month. So absolutely, the science does suggest that constant productivity really is a myth more than anything.
And we're already getting some listener questions in this morning, and Joe is asking, do energy levels really vary down to the season or even the month of the year?
So thank you, Joe, for that question. They absolutely do vary with seasons. The data isn't quite as conclusive as down to the month. And it should be said that this varies from person to person and also with the geographic location of where someone lives. But certainly we do see people reporting more energy and then also putting that energy into practice with, for example, people tend to be more active over the summer months if they live in the northern hemisphere. So over, you know, over warmer months, we all tend to be more active, and people tend to, in fact, sleep a little bit less because that sleep need reduces somewhat. So, yes, there are certainly those fluctuations.
Is it possible to manage or optimize our biological clocks?
So as a scientist, I am somewhat wary of the kind of desire to optimize everything. But broadly speaking, I would agree that it is possible. So being aware of your own biological clock or your chronotype, so that's your kind of natural sleep and wake timing, and when you cognitively feel at your best, being aware of that kind of natural setting for yourself can be really helpful. So, and you might just kind of think for yourself when this might be. So some people are at their cognitive best early in the mornings. Some people find early mornings incredibly difficult. So that might already give you some idea. And that can be a useful starting point. Now, of course, we often don't have the flexibility to fully organize our lives around that natural timing preference. But to the extent that we do have got that flexibility, it can essentially make our lives more pleasant, and it can make us use our time more wisely and really kind of give us some clues as to when we might need a break or give ourselves, cut ourselves a little bit of slack.
Dr. Remsgar, we work in a 24/7 field here. Some folks are early birds who enjoy getting to work at 3 a.m. Others prefer working the night shift as night owls. Is there a scientific difference between people who like to get up early and work or those who prefer to stay up in the later hours?
Yes. So the science is really kind of starting to look into this a little bit more intensely. The best data we have on this at the moment really revolves around kind of some of the metabolic and kind of health-related differences, in that it tends to be, and again, this will vary across people, but there is some evidence showing that people with somewhat earlier chronotypes, so people that, you know, feel their cognitive best kind of in the morning, that they can sometimes have better metabolic health. And I would caution here that You know, this doesn't mean that if you prefer to be productive in the night, this will mean that you'll have poor health outcomes. It just means that maybe our society is in fact quite rigid around accommodating for the early chronotypes better. But really, yeah, the science shows that there are some health related differences, but we are really just starting to get some better data in on the validated measures of productivity and in the workplace. So a lot of that data that we currently have is anecdotal, and similar trends do exist, mostly in the way that where people have the flexibility to adapt their work schedule to what fits their chronotype, that can be really beneficial. So having that flexibility will mean that everyone gets to do their best work and perform at their best while also staying healthier.
What kind of role does diet play in that metabolic health for productivity?
So diet is a really important impact in health in general. But in general, we know that if we align our dietary intake, so if we align when we eat and drink with that chronotype, and specifically also layer on that element of our bodies like to have a break from consuming calories overnight, that combination tends to lead to the best health outcomes. So as much as I think, you know, for some people, especially when being up overnight, sometimes you may need or want a snack, but there are kind of two literatures really in the scientific field showing that one, generally aligning your activities, including food, with your chronotype might work better, which might mean not forcing yourself to, you know, have breakfast really early if that's not what you feel like. And then that second strand of science that shows that, in fact, overnight, having a bit of a break is really beneficial on a cellular level so that the cells can kind of restore themselves and be ready for the next day.
Our listener Angela is asking, how important is exposure to sunlight and fresh air, and how does that end up impacting mood on top of productivity?
Thank you very much, Angela. You are certainly onto something. So daylight is one of the key impacts, and specifically exposure to daylight and sunlight outdoors is a lot more potent as a signal to our bodies. So daylight is in fact one of the key kind of signaling mechanisms that our body then takes to start a range of processes from the molecular level and all the way up to kind of the resulting mood and our productivity. So if we can, getting some sunlight and daylight exposure kind of first thing in the morning or at least reasonably early in the day, that's really, really beneficial as a signal to our body that the kind of the day has started, and to kickstart a lot of those mechanisms from metabolism to also already starting that timer, if you will, until the time that it's time to go to bed in the evening. So certainly there's effects on daylight from all the way from the molecular level all the way to mood, mental health, and productivity.
Can artificial lighting at all provide a substitute for actual light, fresh light outside, natural light?
In general, I wouldn't say that there is a close substitute. Of course, oftentimes we can't get access to, you know, pure kind of sunlight if we live in an area where it isn't sunny or if the weather just isn't in our favor. Being from the UK, I certainly know that. But there are, to the extent that, you know, people don't have access to that sunlight, still going outside, even if it's overcast or even raining, that still, in fact, does carry that signal of daylight to our bodies. So that would still be recommended. And then if anyone is experiencing kind of more severe effects of the fluctuations in daylight and those effects, it may be worth looking into the kind of clinical grade SAD lamps. So seasonal affective disorder is, you know, the very kind of clinical end of the spectrum where we are already affected by this. So talking to your doctor or looking into those types of tools may be the nearest substitute we've got.
Dr. Remsgar, there's a lot of hype around wearables and health trackers which assign a sleep or stress score. How accurate are they?
Oh, this is a great question. Thank you, Jason. So I am a wearable scientist, and in general, I think wearables have made strides in how accurate the sensors are and how accessible they make data about our own health and our own bodies to people. That being said, I would caution against over-relying on any single number that a wearable might give you. And if, to the extent that we do take these numbers into account, it's best to compare ourselves against our own baseline in something. So, for example, wearable data can be really helpful in telling us whether there's a trend of, you know, a declining heart rate variability, or if, you know, we've seen a decrease in our daily step counts. That can be really helpful. But I absolutely would caution against just kind of waking up and checking our phone first to see what the wearable says about our sleep. We can still check in with our own bodies first, and then perhaps use the wearable data as a supplement to that.
Is there a concern that folks using those wearables could become even more stressed if they see a poor number or a trend, and that would further impact their sleep patterns?
We do see that in a small minority of wearables users, and particularly in the crowd that tends to try and optimize for everything quite aggressively. And again, I very much understand the appeal of that. But there are, I do think whenever we talk about, you know, wearables, and again, I do think they are wonderful tools, and the science certainly supports that. They really do empower people, and they can really inform us about our body, and increasingly are sometimes able to detect things that may be clinically relevant that are then worth taking to the doctor and talking about based on that data. But if you are someone who finds themselves thinking about their wearable data quite a lot, and if that becomes a source of any kind of distress, then there may be value in thinking about how often you'd like to check that data, or even if it might be time for a bit of a break from that wearable to kind of reconnect with what the body is telling us before relying on external numbers.
Dr. Remsgar, next question comes from the newsroom. We are a 24-hour operation. How do you approach unusual work shifts or graveyard hours?
That is a great question that we do get a lot in this type of work. So inevitably, situations where we can't, you know, change or set our schedule to fit our kind of natural timing preferences, those situations do happen. And the best way we can kind of prepare for that is to build in almost a stress and resilience buffer that can be done through just kind of general healthy lifestyle. So getting enough sleep where we can be really, really important in equipping our body to be resilient towards the kind of challenge, both physiologically and sometimes mentally, that can be working a graveyard hour kind of work shift. Enough sleep, getting regular exercise in, and also keeping an eye on whether we see any trend over the course of maybe months or even years that might suggest that, you know, our body is getting kind of wear and tear on it. But in general, I think thinking about the general healthy lifestyle and getting in exercise, healthy diet, and so on all we can, and perhaps using caffeine strategically when we need to stay up just kind of on an acute level.
We're known as workaholics in America, Dr. Remsgar, but do we see this kind of productivity craze elsewhere internationally?
Increasingly so, yes. And I think that's why it makes it particularly important to talk about. It's the research shows that over one third of meetings now happen, you know, asynchronously and across different time zones. And that means that people are increasingly being pulled into kind of times and schedules that might not fit their natural aligned schedules best. And with the kind of just increasing globalization of work teams and workplaces, those norms tend to transfer as well. And oftentimes when we see norms around the workplace and productivity transfer, we've seen this intensification. It's rarely the norms around, oh, let's give people more time off, or let's, you know, schedule for a break for the whole team. Those norms we've seen transfer a bit less. So yes, it's absolutely a really timely and important conversation globally.
Dr. Remsgar, it's been a pleasure having you here today on KCBS.
Thank you very much, Jason. Best of luck.
Subscribe to the All Local wherever you get your podcasts and stream us on your smart speaker 24/7 by saying, play KCBS Radio.